Hey there, this is Dr. Tim Stafford, and you're listening to The Virtual Instructor. Today, we want to continue our discussion about artificial intelligence and other disruptive technologies in education by kind of going backwards a little bit. Dr. Clayton Christensen wrote a great book. He was Harvard Business School professor, and he wrote a really great book. The first one I ever saw was in 1997, but I think it also got republished in 2000. But it's called The Innovator's Dilemma, the revolutionary, they deemed it the revolutionary national bestseller that changed the way we do business. And it really started to address this idea of, if you're going to be an innovator, what kinds of dilemmas are you going to be facing? And one of the biggest dilemmas that Dr. Christensen brings out in this book, and that he really tries to understand, is that there are rules, that there are principles about disruptive technologies. But then the biggest issue is that how do we manage disruptive technologies? And that's really where I want to try to intersect the idea of being a virtual instructor and having a disruptive technology appear, kind of like artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, as an example, because we know that there are going to be others. ChatGPT is probably the most elegant artificial intelligence we've seen so far that does what it does, but it will be the worst one that does what it does in 10 years. In other words, this is going to constantly be evolving. And so how can we go back to what Dr. Christensen was saying and kind of look at some of the principles that surround disruptive technology, and how do we couple that, or how do we reframe that in education in such a way that we can begin to start to manage these things? So what I'd like to do is, what I'm going to try to do here is, I'm going to take each one of the four principles of disruptive technology that Dr. Christensen presented, and I'm going to kind of put a spin on them that will help us reframe them in light of education. The first principle is that companies depend on customers and investors for resources. In order to survive, companies must provide customers and investors with the products, services, and profits that they require. The highest performing companies, therefore, have well-developed systems for killing ideas that their customers don't want. And as a result, these companies find it very difficult to invest adequate resources in disruptive technologies. And so they find themselves kind of on the outs when it comes to understanding the impact of what innovative or disruptive technology can do. I think the way that we can begin to kind of look at this from a educational technology standpoint is that in education, students really depend on learning organizations to provide resources to help them have skills and competencies, to help them develop skills and competencies that will ultimately help them survive and thrive, because it's not just survival, it's thriving as well. Survive and thrive in real world work environments, solving real world problems. This goes back to Merrill's first principles of instruction that talks about learning. Learning happens best when students are solving real-world problems. And I think one of the things that we have to understand about disruptive technology is not so much how is it causing a problem for us, but how can we begin to use it, utilize it, help our students utilize it to continue to help them hone and develop skills and competencies that will help them solve the real-world problems of tomorrow. Artificial intelligence, that's being used in the kind of way that we see in ChatGPT, very well could be something that is going to be useful if you're a law student. That's going to help you find things faster, put briefs together faster. It's going to help you search the internet on a faster level. If you're a researcher, maybe you're going to be searching the internet at a faster level. You're going to be able to pull things together at a greater level. I mean, think about this. I remember when Wikipedia first came out and everybody was saying, oh, you can't use Wikipedia as a source. And I remember telling my students at the time, well, yeah, you shouldn't use Wikipedia as a source, but it certainly is a good place to start because Wikipedia can give you kind of an overview of a lot of things. And it may not be the most accurate, but it's going to give you certainly an overview of something. So if I want to go look at instructional design, or if I want to go look at, you know, the principles of constructivism or whatever, probably Wikipedia is a good place to start. And then I can look who the big authors are, who the big players are, who the researchers have been, and then I can start heading out to the internet to try to find some of these things. And it can help me to kind of solidify who the more validated voices are. Wikipedia definitely had its place, but so much of the time what we heard about Wikipedia was, don't use Wikipedia. And I think that really goes along here with this idea that you know, there are some companies that found it, that Dr. Christensen found it very difficult to invest in the adequate resources and disruptive technologies because they didn't actually understand how to use them in such a way that they could ultimately benefit from them, even though it was going to cost them something up front. And I think in education, we're the same way. I think we face that same problem where if we're not careful, we will avoid these technologies for so long that by the time that we finally get around to actually using them, we're so far behind the eight ball that now our students can't even get caught up even if we wanted them to. And so what we've got to do is we've got to take a hint that if this thing is out there, something like this artificial intelligence is out there, how do we harness it now? And that really leads us to our second principle that Dr. Christensen talked about that had to do with disruptive technology, and that small markets don't solve the growth needs of large companies. To maintain their share prices and create internal opportunities for their employees, successful companies need to grow. So it isn't necessary that they increase their growth rates, but that they must maintain them. And as they get larger, they need increasing amounts of new revenue just to maintain the same growth rate. Therefore, it becomes progressively more difficult for them to enter the newer, smaller markets that are destined to become the large markets in the future. To maintain their growth rates, they must focus on large markets. For us, I think the way that kind of comes around, because we're not really focused on that as much, but I think what is important here is that what we have to realize is that the competencies and skills that the students are looking for are not going to come by osmosis. So they're not going to come just because we're doing something that's kind of like that, or because we're having them form case studies that look at certain things and we can kind of see at things. I think we're going to have to become very good at using disruptive technologies to create actual things that they're going to have to be able to do. Put them in play in actual, you know, it's not just by osmosis anymore. I think so much of the time in education, we've spent our time, I would liken it unto going to a small market. In other words, a small market is one in education is one where, in my mind, the assessments, the activities, the learning objectives are holistically possibly accurate, but realistically and technically and purposefully, they're not very applicable. And so we're going to have to start to look at what's the larger market that our students are going out into. What's the larger market? We're not preparing students to go out into a market that they don't know how to do anything. We have to prepare our students to go into a market, into a large marketplace, and be able to have skills and competencies that they can apply, whether they learn them in small ways or not. I mean, I think learning them in small ways is okay, but that's not a small market. We're teaching them things that they're going to learn in small ways that can move into larger markets. What's going to be the thing that our students are going to be able to do based on our programs that they're going to be able to be innovative in the marketplace? And so we're going to train them how to use ChatGPT, or we're going to train them how to use some other disruptive technology in a way that is going to be innovative, because when they go out into the world, they're going to be able to use these disruptive technologies to innovate new ideas and platforms, and that's going to change the way industry does business. And that means that ultimately they're going to become thought leaders and production leaders And that means that we've now prepared them for a much greater scenario than just a small than just a smaller scenario. Why not train educators to teach to teach large scale, not just one-on-one? Why not train coaches to coach large teams and put together huge organizations, not just small private organizations? Why not teach business people to have to deal with huge scalable businesses, scalable practices in marketing, scalable practices in leadership, and not just one-on-one or just single user kind of things? And I think in our mind, we always think that we're doing that kind of by osmosis. But after having designed literally nearly 1,000 different courses over the course of my life, I can tell you right now that most of the time what I see, it's much more metaphorical than it is actual. And I think that's part of the problem that we have when we talk about this kind of a situation where we're not going to solve the growth needs of large companies through education by doing things that are only small and metaphorical. Okay, so the third thing then, that leads us into the third principle, which is that markets that don't exist can't be analyzed. Sound market research and good planning, Dr. Christensen says, followed by execution according to plan, are the hallmarks of good management. But companies whose investment processes demand quantification of market size and financial returns before they can enter a market get paralyzed when faced with disruptive technologies because the demand data on markets don't yet exist. I would say that one of the things that really is going to be important for us to take from this idea that markets don't exist is, and we see this in education a lot, if you're talking about being a virtual instructor or you're putting a program together or you're looking at education as some way to solve problems, is that you need to make sure that the market that you are teaching for in the future is this is a problem that you're going to be solving in the future, or that these are going to be skills that are going to be useful in the future. Just because they're useful right now doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be useful forever. And so Dr. Christensen says markets that don't exist can't be analyzed. I say learning objectives, skills, and competencies that don't see the future coming can't be analyzed for quality, for 20 years worth of quality. Are we training students to be good for 5 years, or are we training students to be good for 20 years? And I think part of it is we have to begin to be very good at looking at the market mechanisms, the industrial mechanisms, the industrial competencies that are out there. What do the industries say are the competencies that they believe are important for practitioners to be able to understand, know, and do as a part of being successful in that industry? And further, what do those leaders see as those innovative leaders see as what's coming up next? And that's how we can harness disruptive technologies. What is this disruptive technology of ChatGPT going to do for business? What is it going to do for, if you're in K-12 education, what is it going to do in higher education? And how is that going to trickle down to me? I'll never forget having conversations in 2010 with people who said that, well, online learning may be good for somebody like MIT and Harvard, but it's certainly never going to go to small colleges, and it's certainly never going to get into high schools, and it's certainly never going to go to elementary schools. And boy, was everybody wrong. That's not what happened at all. In fact, all it took was a single instance of something that nobody understood was coming, and it completely disrupted everything. And now all of these disruptive technologies became the back door in for everybody to survive, yet nobody knew what they were doing, and now everything is a mess. And so now we're trying to fix everything. We're trying to get everything on board. But the point I'm trying to make is that you have to be future forward, especially in education. And we tend to kind of dig in our heels and do the things we've always done to get the outcomes we've always gotten. My comment to that is, Have we always gotten the outcomes we always gotten? Do we know that for sure? And if we have, how do we know that we're going to, that that's what's going to be needed 10 years from now? I think we really have to start to look at this from that standpoint. And then finally, technology may not equal, technology supply may not equal market demand. Although disruptive technologies can initially be used only in small markets, they eventually become competitive in mainstream markets. So this is because the pace of technological progress often exceeds the rate of improvement that mainstream customers want or can absorb. So as a result, the products that are currently in the mainstream eventually will overshoot the performance that mainstream markets demand, while the disruptive technologies that underperform relative to customer expectations in the mainstream market today may become directly competitive tomorrow. Once two or more products are offering adequate performance, customers will find other criteria for choosing. These criteria tend to move toward reliability, convenience, and price, all of which are areas in which the newer technologies often have advantages. I think what we can, I think that what we have to look at here as far as technology supply may not equal the demand is we have to look at the fact that thought leadership is always going to be the most beneficial thing that we can produce as an educational facility, as an institution, as an organization. We have to produce thought leaders, and thought leaders should always be able to use disruptive technologies to see the future and to be able to apply it to the future in such a way that they can begin to make decisions about things that nobody even knows exist yet. The thing is that people, if people can graduate from our institutions with skills and competencies that will allow them to harness the next disruptive, we're using this disruptive technology so that they can learn how to harness the next one that we don't even know is coming yet. We don't even understand what's on the horizon. Then the technology supply then that may not equal the market demand is going to be able to be harnessed by thought leaders and high-end practitioners that are going to be able to use it early to get their industries out in front to make them key thought leaders, which means that that reflects back on us who are doing the thought leadership of preparing those thought leaders. It's extremely important that we realize that building future skills is a key to thought leadership, and it's building future skills. How do you build future skills? Well, you have to start to look at how you harness the disruptive technologies of right now. And by learning how to build skills to harness those technologies, you are now building a conduit by which you can then build, you can use those same skills and competencies to grab onto the next disruptive technologies that come out and use them to propel industry, organizations, education, whatever industry you're in, forward in such a way that you stay ahead of the game. This is only going to become worse. I mean, as we become more and more technologically advanced, and as these technologies become more and more disruptive, we have to stop trying to get everything back. My number one concern about ChatGPT is not that students are going to use it to cheat. That students are using everything to cheat. They've always used stuff to cheat. My number one concern for education is that people are going to use that. Turnitin and other plagiarism checkers are going to come up with a way to know that it's a chat GPT. It's an AI. And then we're just going to go, okay, we have the plugin. Now we'll go back to what we've always done. And we're not preparing students to be future thought leaders and high-end practitioners that have the skills and competencies to operate in a world that is heavily changing and evolving rapidly. What we've done is we're just using the same old saws that we've always used to cut the same old boards, to put them together. And we're just hoping that somehow it's going to meet the demand of future industries. And yet those industries are talking about how education is so outdated that they don't even know if it matters anymore. We have a chance right now to, as virtual instructors and people that are putting education together in whatever means that we do that, to be disruptive ourselves and to start to say, I'm not going to just throw this technology out. I'm going to figure out ways to use it. And along the way, we're going to make a whole lot of mistakes and things are going to be really ugly. And it's going to be a total mess. But that's the best part, is that we're going to be innovators because we're going to be in the soup, making a mess, making mistakes, and we're going to emerge with something that's going to be innovative, thought-provoking, provocative, and future-driven. And if that, if that's the case, then our students too will have better skills for navigating future work, future industry, than if we just do the same old thing we've always done, hoping we get the same, hoping that we get the same outcomes that we thought we were always getting. But I would tell you right now, we're probably not. Well, that's all I have for today. Hope to talk to you next time. Let me know what you think. Put your comments in the chat or whatever, and I'd love to hear from you. And see you next time. This is Tim Stafford on the Virtual Instructor.